It is the Air Raid Podcast brought to you by VivaTheMatadors.com. I am Ryan, your host, and I am joined tonight by Jonathan Althus. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. How are you doing tonight?
Good. I've been battling a lot of people on social media.
You are a social media warrior?
Yeah, I'm talking a lot of people, trying to talk a lot of people off cliffs and ledges, but they seem more than willing to go ahead and jump. One person even accused me of being a weak loser and that he was a winner, and winners like to win and losers make excuses. So it's kind of my weekend in a nutshell after the loss. Obviously, UT outlast Texas Tech 45-37. Patrick Mahomes was intercepted in the end zone. I think everybody saw that to end the game. But there seems to be some... Before we get into kind of the game overall, I'm just going to go ahead and kind of deal with the elephant in the room one more time. We've talked about it from about this point last year. We even had a podcast fully devoted to it, Hunter and I. It says, who's Tech's new head coach going to be? And it was basically we threw out names and basically disproved why they would come or even why Kingsbury should be let go and begin with. But there is at least a growing vocal contingent of fans out there that are done with Coach Kingsbury. And you kind of tell where they're coming from, because they don't say necessarily Coach Kingsbury needs to go or Kingsbury needs to go. It's Cliff needs to go. It's Coach Chill needs to go. It's Coach Bro needs to go. The Coach Chill era needs to end. And Jonathan, we've, you know, in Slack, I think we've all talked about this. We've all had certain frustrations, but at the same time, we always come back to the criteria of what you're wanting. We've seen, you know, what happens long-term with Leach. We've seen a stepping stone coach, and now we have Kingsbury, but the two conditions are whether it's an established coach, which a lot of people want. Again, it's like the Tuberville type of people coming out who want the 24-27 game like TCU all the time. Run the ball, good defense. That's what wins games, even though he didn't win games.
He lost games. He didn't just not win. He lost games.
Yeah, and I actually had stats going back and forth with a guy on that. Anyway, we're going to get to that. But anyway, you have two conditions on coaches coming. If you, one, an established coach, or two, an up-and-coming coordinator. First of all, what established coach? We're talking about established, not an up-and-coming coordinator. An established coach. I'll pose this question to you, and don't try not to be sarcastic because we've already had this conversation. Don't dismiss it. But give me a legitimate, established coach. If we were to fire Kingsbury in the offseason, give me a coach who would come to Lubbock. I'll wait. This might be a long pod.
There's actually one coach that I've started to think may be a possibility, just because of what he's currently doing or not doing. And that's Tom Herman. I think his stock is dropping.
No, established coach. We're talking about a lot of not people... an up-and-coming coach.
Okay.
An actual... we're going to get to up-and-coming coaches, coordinators, that type of thing. We're talking about established coach. Someone who knows how to coach in college football. Because that's the whole thing. Kingsbury doesn't know how to coach college football. He only knows offense. He's basically a coordinator. We need an established head coach to come into Lubbock and set the ship. Basically, people are calling for someone like Tuberville, like a Mack Brown, like Art Briles, heaven forbid. Spike Dykes coming back or coming back to Lubbock from Cal. There are those dreamers out there that think that there's somebody that's just waiting, you know, like a Peterson, who went from Boise to Washington. Give me an established coach that's going to want to come to Lubbock. And again, I'll wait.
Yeah. I know a lot of fans are going to talk about that guy up in Washington, a Washington State coach that
yeah, he's
they
not
want,
coming back.
But there is no way he will come back.
And it's not important for him to come back at this point. I mean,
no.
I mean, people like Leach. I'm one of those people. I'm rooting for him at Wazoo. That's okay. I'm excited about the coach. I'm going to be biased. I'm excited about the coach we have. But he's not coming back. He's not leaving something that he's actually built from, like, the cupboard is bare. There's, like, pulling people out of the stands to run defensive line, and they're $160. And in 5 years, he's done a really good job, and he's getting them you know, to believe up there, and it's really exciting. But he's not coming back. He's not leaving
no.
that to come back to Lubbock. So, again, anybody else?
No.
Nope. Okay. Second person. All right, so let's go with up-and-coming coaches. A lot of people like, yeah, Tom Herman's going to come in. Is he going to stay in Lubbock for longer than 3 years before he
no.
goes on somewhere else? Okay, so if he's not, if you can't get someone to come to Lubbock, first of all, because believe it or not, fans, sorry, we are not a blue blood school. We are not a top tier program. We are a mid tier program. And that's nothing to be upset about. It's just the facts. It's based on geography. It's based on our recruiting sphere. It's based on history, all that. We are a mid tier program. You're not going to get someone to come to Lubbock that's established. And two, even if you do, or an up-and-coming coach like Tom Herman, who's going to leave a top 10 Houston to come to Lubbock, that makes sense. I mean, or a ranked Houston to come to Lubbock. Is he going to stay here for more than 3 years before
no.
he leaves and we start all over again? If you're going to be a perennial just stepping stone for coaches, hey, you know what? Have fun with the mediocrity that everybody's upset about.
And I know people don't want to admit it. This is probably going to anger people. But West Texas and Lubbock is not an appealing place to come to.
No, I mean, you have to, you either love it or leave it.
Yes.
There's a lot of people that don't like the lifestyle. They don't like the isolation. There's a lot of people that do. When I went out there for my college visit, I fell in love with Lubbock, but I'm an introvert. Go figure. I love the town. I love the city. I loved everything about the university. I think I would go crazy in a place like Austin where you cross the street and you're in downtown Austin and you didn't know actually you were on campus. You know, some people love that. Some people want to be where that is, and that's perfectly fine. But, you know, recruits, you have to find the right set of people that want to come to Lubbock. And everybody that we love in the history of Texas Tech football, from Zach Thomas to Wes Welker to B.J. Simmons, even Cliff Kingsbury, you know, all and down the line, Billy Joe Tolliver, whoever, you know, Morris, you can go on and on and on throughout the 90s, 80s, 60s, 50s. We'll get Don Williams on here and he can tell us about it. But those guys built the culture of Texas Tech. It's that, it's a special type, it's a niche, it's a unique player that comes here and succeeds. And if you look at the players that do come here and then end up transferring, it's pretty much go figure that they weren't thrilled with the university to begin with. Or the town or the city or the culture, whether it's Mayfield or whether it's Bethel. You know, it can go down the line. Starts from the Tuberville era, whoever transfers out of here as a player, they're not fully involved. You know, they don't get the culture, they don't get the city. So it's hard to recruit here. And
yes.
The fact that you have a coach who has the number two, number one overall offense in the country, and the defense has shown improvement, you've got in 2000, in this last recruiting class, you can see how far we've come with these players, especially when you talk about Kingsbury running a clean program, dismissing a lot of players. Pretty much even the guys that transferred were basically already suspended.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we talking about here? I've heard fans say we never compete for a national championship. and that has to change. And my response is, in what world, sir? Do you really think that you can put Texas Tech on the same pedestal as Ohio State? Michigan.
It's going to take building a program, and you're not going to get that with a rental coach.
It's not even talking about building a program. It's resources we have available. I mean, if we want to talk about resources, everything that you see here was built from 1997 to 2009. And then there's a little bit of a jump start with Tuberville, and there's a little jump start with Kingsbury of building the city and getting funds into the athletic program. You want to know how much Jim Harbaugh makes at Michigan? Go ahead, guess.
$4 million?
Try nine plus.
And people think we're paying Cliff too much at three.
Yeah, I mean, let's just talk about just resources. If you have the resources to pay a coach, and Jim Harbaugh is a great coach. I'm not saying he's not. He's done wonders with that program. But at the same time, Michigan was never, when they were down, it wasn't because of the recruits. People wanted to go to Michigan because they were legacies, because of the history. It wasn't because of the recruits that they didn't have the right coach. You know, Rich Rodriguez came in and he tried to kind of screw up the culture and he tried to go a different way. And what did they do? They bring back Jim Harbaugh, who is a quarterback at Michigan. He had all the talent in the world right there in front of him. He just had to implement what he wanted to do, and he was off and running. I mean, Michigan didn't go from always having 4- and 5-star recruits to 2- and 3-stars, and then all of a sudden back to 4- and 5-stars. They've always had 4- and 5-stars.
Always. Look at Pipkins.
Yeah, always.
He was there. He got recruited, I think, by Rich.
Yeah, I mean, it just happens. You know, Urban Meyer, $6 million, $6 million plus, and Saban is $6 million plus. I don't necessarily think it's about money. I just think that's just an indication of the resources we have available at Texas Tech. And we can't compete on that level. Facilities. It takes us a longer time to build facilities. You know, everybody's talking about since, what, 2000, if not before, why don't we have an indoor facility? Guess what? It's going to take a long time to get those funds to help build it.
And, the boosters that are going to provide those funds needed something to believe in, and they didn't have that until we hired Cliff.
I mean, everybody's upset with 500 ball, but I'm actually, again, I'll ask the questions of, let's just look at our previous established coach in Kingsbury. And again, we may be biased. It may be frustrating at times, but are you more or less excited to watch a Kingsbury telecast, you know, game on TV or a Tuberville game on TV? I mean, as far as styles, not just the coach coaching, but the style of play.
It was so boring.
It wasn't just boring. It was almost ineptitude on, you know, defense. It was ineptitude on, you know, I've heard a lot of times about how this is the most poorly coached team Tech has ever had. And I'm thinking, do you remember the running joke Tech special teams was under Tuberville about the onside kicks that we'd try and then they were returned for touchdowns on us?
Yep. I think nobody knew to even touch the ball.
Yeah, it was like 3 in 1 season. And Tuberville was running special teams, and he said before he ever started, don't go to the bathroom when we punt or do stuff like that when special teams come out. Do we remember the, you know, no one showing up for 2011 senior day against OSU and us losing 66-6, and it was 63-6 with 3 minutes left to go in the third, and by the grace of God, Mike Gundy took his foot off the gas, or he would have put up 90
easily
on that team. 90, not 82. He would have put up 90. Or, yeah, we beat number 3 Oklahoma and Norman, but we came back and laid an egg 41-7 against Iowa State. Single digits at home in 2 games. I mean, there's a level here of, hey, I would rather lose throwing a ball into the end zone with a chance to tie it or, you know, go to 2-point conversion and lose than be sitting there watching Texas just absolutely be up by 4 or 5 scores, because it's happened. 2012, we were ranked 18th. Texas was ranked 23rd, and they absolutely destroyed us in Austin. You know, Tuberville said, hey, we want a coach that beats Texas more than 20% of the time. Well, Tuberville never beat Texas. Kingsbury is 25%, and that win was in Austin. Yes, there are times we look and we said, you know, oh, we could have won this game. Absolutely. We're not disputing that. But, you know, everything points to the type of team that we want, and I think people are way too quick to sit there and say coaching is going to change it. And, like play calling, people are blaming Cliff for the play call. You may not like the result, but you can't dispute the fact that Mahomes missed Tony Brown.
Not the play call. That's not the fault of the play call.
Yeah, that's the read that he made.
Exactly.
And Mahomes in that situation has to understand you still have a timeout to work with. So everything is still open to you. You can work underneath, get the first down, and get, you know, within the 10-yard line or 15-yard line and make an easier throw, and it may open up different things for you, like we saw when we tied it against TCU. You get down there, and a lot of people think we have trouble, but it actually opens up some things, some spacing issues that we can be really creative with. That's a read issue. That's something we've been talking about with Mahomes. As great of a quarterback as he is, as great as an athlete as he is, his ability to create something when things break down is phenomenal, but he also has trouble executing the offense from the pocket. How many throws are on the run?
How many?
Yeah, well, most of them. And actually, he actually misses more balls when his feet are set than when he's on the run. I think there's a comfort level there, but at the same time, he kind of, when you start running, you're losing your timing, you're losing where people are on the field. And yes, he's able to turn 3rd and 26 into a first down, but he still misses guys on first down wide open running down the middle. So there's it's not just one thing or another. There's a lot of things that aren't clicking. And at the end of the day, in this game especially, I'm going to tip my cap to Charlie Strong. I mean, it's
now you're starting to sound like Tuberville.
No, I mean, I'm not going to say that they were more prepared than us or anything like that. I'm just going to say, hey, there's an old adage I used to be told as a pitcher. And my coach used to tell me it is still, you may, I'll try to get the exact quote. He said, it is possible to make no mistakes and still lose. Now, did we make mistakes? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that you have to find someone to put the blame on the loss, you know, for just because you lost. There is another team out there playing, a good team with a good defensive head coach, who I think is great, and he's facing a lot of turmoil down in Texas. Obviously, Texas has a little bit different expectations than Texas Tech, but he created a lot of waves when he went in there before he ever played a game and dismissed 25 some players from the program and said, we don't like what's going on here. We don't like your character. We don't like your effort. We don't like your attitude. And I'm going to develop a culture. And even if it sets us back, this is the way I'm going to run this program. UT fans, alum, and boosters hated it.
Oh, yeah. There
they
was so
hated it.
Much.
They were like, oh, yeah, that's all well and good until we start losing. You better need, you know, you need to win games. I don't care what people say. I would rather have a 500 coach and not be under investigation by Title IX or NCAA or recruiting violations. I would like to rather keep a clean house and be 600 or 500, sorry, than try to get away with stuff and have wins vacated and everybody thinks we're a joke for other reasons than our on the field play. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I know I've rambled on, but I've been hot about this since the game and what people have been saying. I don't know. You got anything to add on that front?
You covered a lot of it. A lot of stuff that bugged me about this game, or not really the game, but as much as the reaction of the fans, was how quick they were to anoint Kingsbury after the good win last week, and then they were so quick to turn on him this week.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
And one of the things he said is that it's possible to do everything right and still get beat. And last week, Cliff outcoached Gary Patterson.
Which is hard to do, actually.
In Fort Worth. When you look at what TCU just did to former 16th-ranked Baylor this week, that's the same TCU team that only scored 24 in a full game and two overtimes against Tech. So it's not that you can anoint him one week and bash him the next. I mean, obviously that's what fans are going to do because they were bashing him the week before that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is emotions are too swayed based on a win or loss. I mean, you know, we were joking about it at the beginning of the season. We put 69 points on SFA and everybody's like, hey, we actually may be a 10-win team this year. And then the very next week we give up 66-68 to Arizona State and be like, man, we're going to win like four games this year. It's like the same people on social media. We're like,
and then we beat TCU and we're like, okay, we're going to make a bowl. And
yeah, we're going to win out. We're going to be 8-4 now.
We lose to Texas and it's like, well, there's no way we're going to win a bowl now. We're not even going to make a bowl.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just frustrating. It's not because Kingsbury is an alum that he's getting a pass where Tuberville, if he was in the same situation, I think it's more of how is he running the program beyond wins and losses? How is, you know, you can talk about it all day long. We've had former players on this podcast from Tremaine Swindle to Stephen Sheffield to Mickey Peters and Ryan Aycock up and down the line. And one thing that I've talked, you know, a lot with them about is just how they feel about their coach. And although none of them have really come out and said anything except Tremaine, you know, they weren't thrilled with Leach, but they loved him.
Right.
And that wasn't there with Tuberville. There was a disconnect because a lot of those players said, you know, even Chef in the last pod, the alumni pod, go check it out. He was talking about Tuberville and said, you know, it must be nice for these players and, you know, for Kingsbury to have a coach that actually comes to practices.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit different than what Tremaine said, because Tremaine said that he would actually come to practice, but he would, you know, be riding around on his golf court. Stephen Sheffield just said that there were times where Tuberville didn't even come to practice. That's what I got from that. We know he wasn't in the meetings. He, you know, didn't come to practice. And you want to talk about passion. The only passion I've ever seen from him was standing on the sideline with his arms crossed, not calling plays, not calling defensive plays, snatching headsets off of assistants, because on senior day 2012, with nobody in the stands, Kansas takes you to double overtime. Again, even if we got somebody else, say we did say, all right, Kingsbury, thanks. It's just not working out. Gibbs isn't staying, obviously. So Gibbs is gone. The entire coaching staff's gone. We start over. If you do get somebody here, guaranteed, unless they're an alumni, because the world is different now than it was in 2000 when Leach came, unless it's an alumnus, they're not staying more than 3 years. They're looking for the next job. Even if they do really well, boom, great. Why? Because Texas Tech is not a top-tier program. It's not a dream job for anybody other than an alum, i.e. Kingsbury. So, I don't know. Moving on. Because
we could go for a while on that subject.
All of our six listeners already turned us off 15 minutes ago.
They're like, oh, they're talking about this again.
Yeah. It's just, thanks for your patience, everybody. It's just, it's really frustrating to see the overreaction emotionally to a loss, especially a loss where we're in it. There's been plenty of losses in the past, not just with Kingsbury, but with another administration running the team where we weren't even in it. I mean, we weren't in it from the very beginning. Again, I'd point out Iowa State pick six on the first play from scrimmage. It's just like, okay, that's how it's going to go.
They knew exactly what play was running.
Yeah, I knew exactly what play was coming too, because Neil Brown always ran the same play, first play. 10-yard hook. I think Sheffield called that a 96. I think that's what it's called. Anyway, going to the game and looking over all of it, after all the emotions settled and the frustration of the loss, the defense really stepped up. People are going to point out giving up over 340 yards rushing to Freeman, but at the same time, the amount of stops, the turnovers that they did to give the offense a chance was incredible.
Yeah, that 300 isn't going to look pretty, and it wasn't. But the fact is, I think that was – we saw more stops from the defense on this game than we have all season against any legitimate Big 12 team. Sorry, Kansas, but you don't count.
You're talking – whoa. TCU has a legitimate offense.
Yeah, but I think if we went back to look at it, I think we would see more stops in the Texas game than we did in the TCU game.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't watch the whole TCU game, so I can't say that for sure. We held them pretty good. We did, but I think the timely stops were more evident in TCU because we won.
Well, I mean, I would say, you know, we really didn't get the stops other than the second and fourth quarter. Fourth quarter was huge, but
yes,
but yeah, oh, I gotcha.
In that fourth quarter, it just looked like neither team wanted to win. It was almost no, we don't want the ball here. You take it. I'm not sure if there was something wrong with Foreman, but if UT had just kept him in and gave him the ball every time, we probably would not have been as close as it ended up being. Even though we were able to stop him on one of those last drives. Not sure how much of that small injury he had was bothering him. But it was good to see the defense step up at times. Unfortunately, I'm a little concerned with the rushing defense still. I don't think all of that was on the players. I don't think all of it was on Coach Gibbs. I think there's equal blame to go around for that. And then the offense, just not what you want to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard. I think, say what you want, but I think fans in general have been spoiled with offense over with Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury's offense is actually better than Mike Leach's ever was at Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Even without Patrick Mahomes, it's been better as far as yardage and average points. It's way better than Neil Brown's and Tommy Tuberville's, who I don't even think we're in the same realm of the ability to put up points like Texas Tech has under Kingsbury. And I think we've gotten a little spoiled with that. I think we're taking that for granted. I know under Coach Leach, 37 is a lot of points back then, believe it or not. And same thing with Tuberville, 37 is a lot of points. 45 is insane. Over 50 is a blowout. And if you put up 60, you're playing an FCS team.
or Nebraska.
Or if, Washington State playing Arizona. That was incredible to do to a conference opponent. But
yeah.
37 traditionally has been a lot. And I think we've gotten pretty spoiled in thinking that that's just the norm of – no matter who you're playing, even Texas or Oklahoma, as you've seen when we played Oklahoma, that we're going to put up 55 every game, and it's not a question. And if we don't, then obviously someone's to blame. It's Pat. It's Kingsbury's play calling. It's Eric Morris, who has no business being a coordinator, and up and down. It's just like, okay, there is a defense out there. They're not going against air. And some plays work and some plays don't. In the heat of the moment, Mahomes may make a bad read like he did in the last play against Texas when he had Tony Brown open with one timeout remaining and kind of, you know, extended the game at least one more play instead of forcing the issue. So, you know, it's not just one thing. I'm so tired of some people taking the blame off the players and saying it's all the coach's fault. That's why we need to fire the coaching staff or Kingsbury. And I'm tired of people saying, it's all the, all the players' fault for their mistakes. It's there is another team out there. It's not a video game. You got to tip your cap at some point to the other team for making the stops. I will say this. It's one thing that I get really frustrated with, that when we put up 66 points on someone, it's not because the other team has a bad defense. It's just because our offense is that good. But anytime anybody else puts up 45 points against us, it's not that they're necessarily that good. It's because our defense sucks. And vice versa. And the last two games, and if you want to be really critical, the last three games have been, over the last 15 years, the most dominant defensive minds in the game in college football, between Mike and Bob Stoops, Gary Patterson, and Charlie Strong. What Charlie Strong did at Florida, what he did at Louisville, and what he's now doing at Texas. Obviously hasn't had the same results at Texas, but very, very strong, respected defensive minds. Three games in a row, and we're upset that they held us to 27 and 37. I mean, people were upset in the way that we won't beat TCU.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, just... And I think, I guess going back to the state of the fan base, I think it's going to be a no-win scenario from here on out, unfortunately. Those people that have already made up their minds to that a change needs to be made. Any win that does happen is a fluke. Any win that does happen, obviously they gave it to us, like TCU missing three field goals or two field goals and one was blocked. And every time we lose, it's I told you so. It's bad coaching and everything like that. So it's just a
bad coaching, bad play calling.
Yeah, it's just a no-win scenario all the way around. So, I don't know. I really enjoyed watching this game. It was frustrating at times, just because you're always excited when the defense does stand up and get a stop, and you're thinking you really need to take advantage. I think the most frustrated I was the entire game is after Coleman ran it back for the touchdown and we were up 23-14 and our defense made another stop on the very next drive and we got the ball back. I was like, now's the time to extend this lead.
Get some separation
and really put your foot on their throats. And I think we had a penalty right off the bat. And then,
yeah, I think that was when that weird illegal formation, which – the left tackle lines up that way.
Yeah, and he 90%
was 90% of the time,
because I think the main thing that officials look at, both pro and college, is uniformity across the offensive line. And if you look at the above picture, the coach's camera angle, the right side was lined up significantly different than the left side. And I think if the right side, the right tackle was back a little bit as well, they would have said, okay, that's the line of scrimmage. They're up on the line of scrimmage because it's across it. But when you had one group significantly, more straight, and then that left side was obviously curled back, I don't have a problem with the call. It's just not something you like to see in that situation, especially on early down, which puts you behind the chains. But yeah, we couldn't do anything there. Had to punt, and next thing you know, we're going into halftime down by one. And I think that was a frustrating experience right there. But overall, the second half, I was pleased with keeping it close. You gave yourself a chance to win at the end. We were not favored in this game by Vegas.
No.
I think it was 3.5 or 4 points.
Yep,
I wasn't sure.
3.5.
But, that's – Yeah, we weren't favored against Oklahoma. We weren't favored against TCU. We weren't favored against Texas. And I don't think it necessarily has anything to do with us as a team as much as it does our quality of opponents. When you look at kind of the gauntlet that we're running right now. Yes, they're all winnable games, but it is quite a gauntlet. And it's not over going into Oklahoma State this upcoming week. Another very winnable game. You know,
we won't be favored in it, though.
We won't be favored in it. Not at all. And I mean, I think there's more excitement around Iowa State's program right now than there is at Texas Tech, and I think that's sad. A lot of good things in this. You were talking about Coleman in the pre-pod. He's coming up huge for Texas Tech.
Yeah, he had that big-time interception in the end zone against TCU.
Mm-hmm.
And then that incredible strip and run that he actually stepped out at the one, but Big 12 refs, thank you. Not that it probably would have mattered. We probably would have scored the next couple of plays anyway.
Yeah, they're so quick to jump on that legal formation or the holding penalties of, you know, oh, it's an undisciplined team when we get called on that. But nobody bats an eyelash when, you know, we don't get the, you know, they let the stepping out at the one go by.
Yeah. And not just a toe, his whole foot was
it's
out.
Just like, oh my gosh. But it's out.
It's really good to see a freshman play so well. And Foreman is a big, strong guy. It's not easy to take the ball out of his hand.
Did you see who stood him up?
No, I did not.
I mean, you want to talk about a weight difference. I was impressed.
Was it Deshaun?
No. Go back and look at who stood up Foreman going into the end zone because he was breaking tackles, and out of nowhere, I mean, he eventually gets trucked. But the initial hit, when he stands Foreman up, and it's also true freshman Desmond Smith. He got in there and he absolutely, you know, took Foreman from a or Freeman from a. You know, shoulders down, driving, trying to push the pile to almost standing straight up, and he had to regather himself and push it back down. I was really impressed. He ended up getting lost under the pile and trucked, obviously, but it was impressive to see how that initial contact, Dante wasn't ready for it. he went backwards a little bit.
I did see it. Yeah, he got rocked back onto a single foot.
Yeah. So that's impressive. You look at who I think is playing the best on the defensive line right now is Broderick Washington, redshirt freshman, another young guy. And again, that's not saying anything bad about Fajoco or Pipkins. I think they're doing, you know, what they do. They do what they do. For someone who's coming out and stepping up that you weren't expecting at the beginning of the year, Broderick Washington is doing awesome. You also look at what we were missing this game. Lauderdale was held out. Gary Moore, a big time pass rusher, maybe not great in the run D, but a good pass rusher trying to get pressure on
a good quick agile.
Yeah, Bouchel. He was held out for off the field issues, and our starting middle linebacker Devonta Hinton was held out as well for what was called off the field issues by the broadcasting crew. I don't have any confirmation on that of whether it was an injury or not, but
the only thing I saw was that one of the, I think it was the Red Raider sports guys said that they did not believe it was related to an injury.
Yeah. And it was all but confirmed on the broadcast, but then you look at your secondary front, your linebacking core, and two of your three starters are freshmen, and Jordan Brooks, true freshman, Jordan Brooks and Brandon Stringer.
I thought Stringer came in and played pretty well.
He did. I mean, both of them did well. But you're asking, you know, true freshmen in that type of environment. It's asking a lot, to be quite honest. And I think they did a phenomenal job. I'm so excited about these guys. But once again, true freshmen. This time last year, they were playing high school. And if you listen to the alumni pod, which was our last pod with Acock and Peters and Sheffield, they keep saying that there's a big difference between a sophomore, junior, and a true freshman, believe it or not. So I was really impressed. You go even to DeLeon Ward, 22 carries, 93 yards. I thought he did a phenomenal job running the football when he was asked to do it.
He's got a high ceiling, I think.
He does. He kind of reminds me of the I'm going to pull a name out of the mid-tier history here, but like a Aaron Crawford. Which, you know, Shannon Woods, I believe, or whoever was supposed to start in 09 was eventually removed for Aaron Crawford because Crawford ran harder, who also wore number 32, by the way. So it's kind of interesting. Really liking him. He's a true freshman. You know, just up and down the defense. I was really proud of the way they stood up in the fourth quarter when we needed them to. It's not going to show up, obviously, in the win column, but it was huge for us. And we've been ragging on special teams for weeks now, it seems like. And, boy, did they step up. I think they only had one bad punt, and it didn't factor into a score. I think we stood them up. It was the bad punt right after we were just talking about extending the score, getting some separation, and we had to punt, and it was a short punt, and I think we got it right back.
I think they went three and out.
Yeah, and then obviously we went three and out, or, you know, stumbled, and then they scored. But, you know, Barden had that really good kick, kicked it all the way down to the one. Hatfield is still lights out. And then, you know, the special teams coming up with a fake punt when we needed it in the third, Barden running for a first down. You know, it was huge. I think
apparently that was a call that was straight from our special teams coach,
who I did see on Facebook. Someone said that they needed to fire this week.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I saw that and I wondered why.
So I think Barden did a great job, especially after being called out by Kingsbury and everybody else for, you know, handling the snap at TCU. Some of the other issues they've had punting, or, you know, how much we're missing. What's his name? Simonek.
Oh, Simank, yeah.
Yeah, Simank. And how big of a leg he had, and how we're missing that. But I thought special teams did outstanding. Obviously not a perfect game, and what I see from this game is when we did make the mistakes, or they just came at an inopportune time. That's it. And you never forget the holding penalty in the drive that we end up scoring on. You always remember the holding penalty that we weren't able to recover from, and we had a punt.
Yeah.
You know, I think you had a great tweet when Derek Willis fumbled the ball when he hurdled, and you were like, get angry at players when they don't try hard enough, get angry with players when they do try hard, or when they try to do too much.
Yeah.
So
it's a lose-lose for the players. And apparently it's a win-win for the fans, because we always get to complain about something.
Yeah, that's what we do, man. Then we hop on the Xbox One, and if we end up getting blown out, we hit the reset button and turn down the difficulty.
Exactly. Turn it to rookie.
Yeah, and maybe that was maybe before or after we went in and edited all of our players up to 99 because we want tech to be awesome.
You're saying you're not supposed to do that?
I'm going to leave that there because that's too much of but we talked about this with several people about how the OU game was a turning point, and even more so the West Virginia game was a turning point. The West Virginia game was a low point, and even though we're 1-2 since then, I think the trajectory of the effort, the execution, especially against the opponents we've played, is definitely in an upward trajectory. I think we've played pretty outstanding since then. And I also want to say, hey, the fan base in the last two home games since the West Virginia game has come out and really supported this team, which is huge.
Yeah, and watching the game against Texas, I did not hear any foul language.
Did you?
Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
I did notice that the fight song is now being displayed on the video board.
You know what? That's so sad. It's the same thing when a player for the other team gets injured and they put on the Jumbotron Strive for Honor.
Like, we have to remind our fans to be
where
good fans.
It used to be a tradition where it doesn't matter. You put your gun up and you're dead silent. Something that we were credited for in the Super Regional.
Yes.
In baseball, about how awesome that was, and they'd never seen anything like that before. Apparently, that's only cool baseball fans. But yeah, not the result that we wanted. Texas Tech drops to 4-5 on the season. We've got Oklahoma State next week. We'll have a preview pod coming up for that later this week. And then I believe we have Iowa State and Ames. So two tough road games coming up, both extremely winnable. I don't care what people say. It is extremely winnable. Get up for these games. Be excited because it is just as easy for us to end this season 7-5 as it is to end 5-7 or 4-8. We'll see. We'll see if Mahomes can make better reads, if Kingsbury can call better plays, if the defense can continue to show the improvement that they have in the last two games, and go from there. But any closing thoughts, Jonathan?
Just one thing. I know we keep talking about, oh, the future's bright, the future's bright. That's not to say that we are not wanting the team to do well in the present. It's not saying that we want all freshmen and redshirt freshmen playing. We have not said that we want Mahomes to be taken out and Jet Duffy put in. We are here for the present, but we are excited for the future.
Absolutely. Great point. It's just seeing it objectively a little bit. Understanding where this team is and how it is being built up. And I will say, you know, people are talking about these guys being Gibbs recruits, and they may be slightly, but a lot of these guys were lined up before Gibbs got the heads up. So I'm going to give props to the previous coaching staff, Mike Smith, Trey Haverty.
We've got guys that aren't even playing yet. They got redshirted.
Houston Miller.
Originally recruited by Mike Smith.
Yeah. You just hope it doesn't affect them negatively, because you know guys like Houston Miller just chomping at the bit saying, oh my gosh, let me just go blow up that left tackle or let me go do something. And I think at the same time, Kingsbury and Gibbs sit there and they go, you know what? I don't think a red shirt is telling us that you need more time to develop. I think it's telling them that we want you here for more than just the next couple of years.
Yeah.
We feel pretty good with Pipkins coming in and Hill coming in that, they're going to be gone. Hill's going to be here one more year, but Pipkins is going to be gone next year. We need somebody to fill in and be an anchor point for years to come. And, I wouldn't take, if I was a player, a red shirt as an insult or a disservice. So
no. Also, something about Hill. His brother Caleb is on campus now and will be playing next year as a linebacker.
That's exciting. We're going to cover all the moves in the offseason. Who probably going to be a couple of transfers out of here. A couple of them we already kind of have our finger on. But we also always get guys, Pipkins and Hill and Stice that have come in here and have been pretty big for us. So a lot of good things. I was really excited about this game. Obviously disappointing we didn't get the win. But if if we can learn how to finish games, if we can learn how to finish halves a little bit, and not let up in any way. Not saying that the effort was let up, but just I think Kingsbury kneeling there with 30 seconds left to go in the first half was a little disappointing. Would like to see him try to do something to at least get in the field goal range and see if Hatfield can boot it through. But things like that. We've said it last year. Fortune favors the bold. Keep taking chances. But for the entire VTM staff, for Jonathan, I am Ryan. This has been the Air Raid Podcast brought to you by VivaTheMatadors.com.